Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Dope Lad Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison. We are back in the Spotify studios. They have allowed us to still be here, plus be back again. I'm not quite sure which is more accurate, but we're still here. They cannot get rid of us. They have tried twice. They've knocked on the door. We're still going. Joined again by Leslie Darwood and Romantha. How are you all? What's going on?
Good.
Yeah,
so
fired up.
This particular episode is super important because Black History Month, which is Black Christmas to me, because I feel like in Black History Month, when you go to all these events, you run into more Black people doing this than you do any time. And I also know when I run into them, it's like, you're making money, aren't you? You're doing something. You've got a fee for being there. So I'm really happy for lots of Black people. But the theme of this Black History Month is saluting our sisters, which is an incredible topic. It's so interesting because every year we go to the Black History Month website, understand what the tone and the theme is, and then send that to organizations, contextualize it for them. That's a part of what my company does. When I saw this one, I kind of like clenched my fist, like, yes, that's the tone, because I couldn't actually think of what it would be. And inherently, in activism, so much is carried, the load is carried by Black women.
Yeah.
Every time there is someone shot by police or killed at the hands of somebody or something goes on in our community, there is a group of Black women who spearhead the conversation, the tone. They seem to be in hella informed about language and in stats and percentages and the procedures of the police and all those things. And they're fighting for us. And I think always the charge has just been that men haven't been doing the same.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really credible one. So right now, I think for Black History Month to sit there and honor groups of women in our lives, I think that's a really good thing to do. So it's actually about honoring and celebrating Black women who have influenced our personal lives. And it's a chance for us to talk about some of the Black women that we've come across, the impact that they've had personally in our lives. And I would say the distinction is we would all hope that our mothers make the list on some level. And so let's try not to do mothers. You can give her a shout out because I think they deserve the shout out. But I think for the purposes, like in your life, day to day, especially in your adulthood specifically, or who's played that role day in, day out with you, just living with you in the way that you're living and giving you some sort of information or help or support, but also just an example of existing that you just admire incredibly. We want to come up with 3 people each. We're going to start to my left.
I was hoping you wouldn't.
So as a Black woman, I think it's actually equally good is that from a Black woman's perspective, how do you honour or who are those Black women that played that role and what your experience be? Who is the first person you would like to go to?
I really instinctively, I want to go against what you just said because I don't think I would be anywhere without my great-gran. And it's not my mom, but it's still the same.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you.
It's because I was raised by her. And I think everything that I am at my core, everything, values, the way I live my life, the way I see the world, comes from her. So shout out to her, first thing. Then it's my aunt.
Well, no, you don't get to jump off that. So to talk about your great-gran.
Okay.
What was the actual impact? What role did she play?
So my great-gran raised me. In a family home. Mm. So she raised, how many generations? She raised her children, her grandchildren, and me, her great-grandchild. And then there was Sister's Children.
This actually explains your old
cousins.
Yeah, very definitely.
My cousins, her cousins' children. So in a house, a two, three bedroom house, there was many, many people.
Four generations.
Yeah. Wow. And they all didn't stay there at the same time. Mm. However, it was always a home that they could come to when there was trouble elsewhere. And some of them ended up staying longer than they should have because, you know, you just have everything there.
It's home.
Until today, if I could, if I really, really could, I would still want to stay in a parental home because it's cost of living is eating us, Archer. And if I could have that support and say, just come home. Mm. Just come home. That is such a privilege to have someone say, come home.
There is a home here.
You're married. Mm. You're a 40-year-old woman. You're married. It's not going well. Come home. I think if I had that, that it actually makes me really emotional thinking about that because people who have that, you don't know how wealthy you are. you know, you have an abundance of wealth in support in family. And I know you always speak about, you know, my mom always said, come home.
Yeah, you always knew you could go
Even
home. As an adult, she tries to get me to come home.
Even as an adult. So yeah, that's the impact she had on me. And I felt like when she passed, when I was about 13, it felt like that, it was like, literally a rug being pulled out from under my feet. I had my mom who was working really, really hard and supporting my great-grand financially. Mm. But the connection and the safety net felt like it was just gone. And from that moment on, I had told myself that I am all I have.
Interesting.
Wild. Wow. But I have told myself that I'm all I have right now. And I've lived that way. So I've just lived a very hyper independent life. I left home when I was soon after school. As soon as I could get away, I did. And I'm an only child as well. So, I mean, it's even more painful for a mother to know that your child is just such a, I don't want to call it nomad, but not really tied to the hip in that way.
Can you quickly speak to how your grandmother plays a role and your mum was the one going out to send money? Because I feel like in South Africa there's a different makeup of family.
100%.
Where grandparents play a frontline role
and
the parents go out to work. But specifically the men would leave the community and go to the big cities to make the money.
And start new
Yeah, families. So can you speak to that a little bit just so that we get the context?
It's a very Caribbean as well, isn't it?
It's in Nigeria as well. I don't think we can separate this by...
Exactly.
I can give context for that, however.
Yeah, please do.
So there's a migrant... there was a migrant generation. There was a generation of migrant workers inside South Africa. So you would live in the homelands, which would not be in the inner cities, in the Johannesburgs or in the Cape Towns or the bigger cities, where they make money as miners or as artisans or skilled workers. And they would have to move there, go stay in hostels. And hostels would be like flats, big, big, big flats with just men living in them. And there's no families there. So those men had lived four, 5 hours away from their family home, go home once, twice a year, send money back, but go home physically to their families very sporadically throughout the year, not as often as they can. And in most cases, they go home and they feel like there's nothing there for them. So they start families in the bigger cities. And that's how this is off topic, but it's still on topic. There's a mom math trend that's going around. And mom math is things that don't make sense. So for instance, when you were a child and your mom said, oh, you're sick, you can stay home today. But as soon as you're on your phone or you're laughing, oh, you're no longer sick, so you're going to school.
Right. Yeah.
So being on your phone equals I'm better, I'm healthy. Right. Or laughing at a joke means that I'm no longer sick.
Right.
So mom math is... So dad math would be, and someone tweeted that that's not my genius, but someone said dad math is having 4 children when you're alive and having 8 children when you die.
Okay.
Wow.
The maths don't math. They're not mathing.
Yo.
Whoa.
Wow.
Men have so much to answer for, you know. You know what? When you're brand as a human being, because the thing is, we think that it's not connected, but that goes into us. Whether we like it or not, we're sitting there with, like, you know, honor and equity and respect. But the guy that has four kids when they're alive and eight when they're dead, that becomes a part of us.
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that, bro. That was a really good double. You know what? You might as well just give all of yours now. Who are the other two that you would or the other two groups of women that you
The supporting act would have definitely been my aunt. My aunt spoiled me as much as she could.
Mm.
I would have the cell phones and I would have the new sneakers. It would be all knockoff, by the way, so it wouldn't be the real ones, but she would make sure that
it was Nike kids, to me, you know,
she would make sure that I had that, you know, we used to call it Fong Kong, which is wrong, right?
What?
Fong Kong phones, which is just me. It just means a phone that you bought from the China shop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Which I got that straight away. Our Fong Kong is Igbo made.
It's
wrong. It's wrong. I would never call anything.
It's good to know. It's for research purposes, not for.
However, she would make sure. So she was a good supporting act in that sense. Then I had a very good friend. I still regard her as a very good friend, who would walk through life with me as a young adult. I had just started working in Cape Town as a young intern, didn't really make enough money, and we would support one another.
Mm.
And I would go and do sleepovers at her place, and she would come over and, you know, sleep at my place, and we would just kind of food share in that way, or indirectly without even knowing, or in a social setup, we would go out together and we'd be like, are you covering or I'm covering or are we clubbing together? And it just felt like I had a sister, because I'm an only child, felt like I had a sister.
Mm-hmm.
I, however, being so hyper-dependent, I never really gave women enough chance to be a sister for me. So that was a really powerful experience. And I mean, life happens and you sort of move in your own direction. She's living in Taiwan now. And yeah, she has two beautiful twins. She has twins and she's married. And she has a completely different life from the one that we had. But I think that was so pinnacle to show me that sisterhood is an important factor of my life. Because up until then, like I said, I had this mentality of I'm all I have.
Mm.
And friends were nice, but I never really leaned in on friendships in that way. And even today as an adult, I still struggle to do the sister-sister, the real... I wouldn't say real because it makes the ones I have less. But the PR of platonic female friendships, I don't experience that. And mine might come from thinking that I'm all I have, I'm all I, you know, can depend on. Mm. So that friend really showed me, you know, you can find sisterhood in friendships.
Cool.
That's her.
Powerful. That would...
I know we can't do the mum thing, but
you might as well.
I have to.
It's not that you can't do it. It was more just. It's definitely a given.
Yeah. Right. Dawood. When I was 18 or 17, I became Muslim, but Dawood is just Arabic for David.
Mm.
So, my family called me David.
Right.
My mum used to call me King David.
Mm.
From a very young age. Mm. Like I don't even remember where it started. I just knows that that's what my mom called me.
Mm.
And that, and she's always telling me I'm a king. Always telling me I'm a king. And she just honed it so much. I walked like it. So it's hard to just remove her because it informed my whole life. Mm. And she gave me the space to be weird, be free and whatnot and say whatever I want. Like, I'm watching my younger son, Luke, now just say weird things. And I'm like, oh, I think that was who I was when I was younger. So I'll just let him keep talking it and don't dispute it. Just, cool, if that's what you think, like, investigate that.
Mm.
And my mum gave me that space. So it's hard not to mention her in terms of people that had an impact or influence on me. But my mum's easily the greatest, my greatest influence.
Mm.
And that, then... I've got my sisters and then my aunts. I watched all my aunts just set up shop and be brilliant in business, be brilliant at looking after themselves, going to get money, just being go-getters.
Mm.
And that despite the men in their lives.
Yeah.
So not only was I watching a matriarchal set up in my house and whatnot, I think me and my brothers can easily concede, whether we like it or not, that the women are smarter and doing better at life than me and my three brothers. Like, they're just on it. My sisters are on it. And it's hard to not recognize that it's probably the reason why I like intelligent women. Mm. Like, I like women being smarter than me. Like, I find comfort in it. And I think it's to do with me as a little boy. And so, yeah, so that's my mum's. Then my mum, my aunts, and think I'll count them all as one. And then my son's mum's, because the first women I mentioned, they're all family. So I watched them up close as a boy. Mm. But becoming an adult, both my son's mums have had such a high level of influence on me. Like, my older son's mum, she literally directs my musical taste. Mm. And I've got quite a varied taste, but she shows me about tunes and whatnot. Like, almost every time I check her, I find something new. Mm. So in the arts, and the way she just makes me look at the world, like, we've not been together since my son was 6. He's 22 now. Mm. But she still shapes, like, how I think and how I move. My younger son's mum, like, in terms of just having support, and we're no longer together, but there's a support there that, like, I can't, if I didn't have, like, times when I get in trouble, like, she just knows. And it's a hug. It's like, she comes round and it actually balances me. Mm. So those are heavy. And then two other women that have had a real impact on me.
Wait, I thought you said you struggled with this.
I did. Yeah, I have a long list. No, but definitely. Now I've got the context a little bit more. So one is Natalie from Flowetry, and that's my sister. In terms of art, she always made me look at art like, you should always push. You should always be yourself. Mm. You should always go. Like, there's always another level and whatnot. In terms of being a performer, be top notch, create a stage for yourself. Like, she was the first one that let me know that the show doesn't start when you hit stage. The show starts when you wake up, going all the way through. That's you remember the whole day. And all my best shows, I can remember everything I was doing. And that, so she had that influence. And then another's one of your friends, Leslie, Michelle Gale.
Michelle Gale.
She's like one of the most intelligent women I've ever met. Like, and the way she just looks at the world and whatnot. Like, there's times when she says something and I feel so stupid. That I know that I'm learning.
This is the former singer and actress.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And that's what I said before we came on the podcast, that you got a friend that saw me and you in a selfie and was like, oh, you know Leslie.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
So not Michelle Moore, it's Michelle Gale.
I've
known
Michelle a long time.
And that, but she's just a top-notch human being. Mm. And if anyone gets 5 minutes to spend in the company of any of the women I've mentioned, like my mum, my sisters, my aunts, my son's mums, Michelle, Natalie, do it. I promise you they'll have a great impact on your life.
Powerful. Wonderful. Right? Yeah. Thank you.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Leslie.
Ah, here we go.
Feel free to put me in there if you want.
Right. So again, like everybody else who's contributed, mother is key. My mum is my North Star. Mm. I mean, she's 81 years old now. And you talked about earlier on about her being home. I'm actually home now. Like, when I come back from the Caribbean, when I spend the summer with her here, because she's based here. And that woman teaches me and shows me guidance every single day, just for the way that she conducts and lives her life. Mm. This woman, she's been practicing yoga for over 40 years.
Oh, wow.
She has a consistent routine and it's unwavered. Like, literally, she sings. She has singing lessons every week. Nice. She does yoga every week. She has a walking session every week. And we know from her calendar where she's going to be every single day of the week.
Wow.
She has an active social life. Mm. She was out with me the other day at the theatre. We were hanging out in Brixton. Mm. She's up for it. She's got the energy, the drive, and the force to keep on going. Now, to think that lady came here when she was 18 years old with not anybody here to support her and to know that she got this far up the mountain with my father and is still here, still contributing, still inspiring others, I think is phenomenal. I love spending time with her. She's my buddy. She's my best friend. We bicker. We're quite similar. But I wouldn't, you know, I'm still very blessed that I have a place called home and I can be home with my mother at this age, in this part of her life. So I have to give her honour and respect 100%. You know, big up the Windrush generation. Now, I have... to pay honor and to a dear friend of mine. We were friends from when we were like 12 years old. Chalk and Cheese, she was into bashment and reggae. I was always into hip hop. We met at school. So different. We are like, almost like miles apart, but so similar. She was home to me. We were good friends. We shared our deepest secrets. We shared our vulnerabilities. We had such a strong relationship, and unfortunately at the age of 45 she passed away. So I have experienced such a loss in terms of like a female person in my life who had been there, who was outside of my family, somebody who was absolutely my sister and was family. You know, she's irreplaceable, but you know, I have other friends who do guide me and who support me on my day-to-day, on a day-to-day level where, you know, family can't fill in like these friends do. And you know, one, I'm the godmother to her son. This lady, Kende, she is one of the most resilient, strong, kind, loving and soft women I know, but you'd never think that she was soft because she's actually, she has that exterior of being very, very strong. And but when you're around her, when you get into who she is, she's like the most supportive person that I've ever known. She loves hard, she gives hard, she's so much to so many people, but she has so many challenges herself, but never complains. She's so resilient, it's unbelievable. The next person in my life is Michelle Moore. Now that lady, we've been friends since we've been like, you know, 16, 17. And we've, what's really nice and what's beautiful is when you go through the path of life, you have people that come in, they're there, but then they drop off because inevitably as you grow and as you progress in life,
grow together.
You just grow apart. People grow apart. You take different paths in life. But me and Michelle have managed to still elevate our lives, grow. I've lived in different countries. I've been married. I've had different boyfriends. We've done so much, which we haven't been on the same road together, but we've still managed to stay together as we've grown and as we've elevated our lifestyles and as we've progressed. So, and that's quite difficult to navigate because inevitably what happens sometimes as you do progress in your life, these people drop off and they don't become as relevant to where you're going in life, but this woman is still there and I don't think she's going anywhere fast. So my mother, Kende, for her resilience, my mother for her strength, and Michelle for her resilience and strength.
Did you always
well.
Recognize Michelle's like leadership skills and stuff?
Yes, Michelle has always been in control of what we were all doing. She's very much like, what are you doing? Why are you not doing that? She was always on us in terms of, well, what's happening? Why are you not using your time efficiently? Like, da, 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 da. She's always been mother, teacher, actually. She's more of the teacher, you know.
So I got to tell everyone her book.
If
you're out there, please go and read her book. It's a game changer.
Absolutely. Real Wins, Michelle Moore. Definitely get on top of that book there. But, you know, we've all encouraged each other so much. I mean, we've all, and our lives are so different. You know, I'm definitely more nomadic. I'm like a traveler. And, you know, Michelle was very structured. And Kende, again, very, very structured, but we're all very different, but we support and bring a lot to the table for each other.
Is Kende a twin?
Kende is definitely a twin. Mm. Yes, and so is Michelle. So there's something in there. I'm connected with these twins, you know. I don't know what that is, but I've got four sets of twins who are friends, good friends as well. So, and I'm the only one that's not a twin, but yeah, those women have definitely shown me so much. And, you know, they're home. They're consistent. They'll be there to the end. Amen. I'm blessed.
Powerful. Oh, I'm really into this. I feel like even going back through my list now and listening to all of your personal stories, it really shows and is a bit of a mirror to who you all are at different points and how we got here in the way that we did. And I think sometimes we don't understand the impact of how women show up in our lives and how much they shape. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it'd be interesting if we ever did a men's list, what the narrative would be and if it would shape in the same way and have the level of impact in the same way. And I think that's something we definitely would have to investigate in another episode. Mm. But thinking about my list, I'll start with family first, because my gran into my mum and my two sisters is, for me, a three generational loop that defied my proximity to women, my desire to, and my capacity to love them in the way that I have done historically and now. My gran, you know, it's so weird because she died about 3-4 years ago. And at the point of her passing, it was actually during COVID, but not from COVID. But in that time, I specifically remember wanting to make a shift in my relation to women at that time. And I wanted women in my life who I had a deeper, meaningful relationship with. I think just knowing people is easy because I don't know, we've been outside for years. Mm-hmm. I've been outside and doing stuff and working and running around like a crazy person since I was like 18 years old. And men and women have all played a role. I just see people as like, you're dope, let's be around. But I think when her presence wasn't in alive with us in the same way, I wanted to make sure that I established healthy long-term relationships with women that were specifically platonic. It became so clear that that was important. And it's weird because I almost did an audit at that time and I couldn't make a real assessment of true closeness. So like I went through something and the people who were helping me at that time, most of them were new or I didn't know very well. I was getting to know them in that time. And I felt like that was a bit of an indictment. So my gran was a catalyst in many ways, but like she is super matriarch. Like I think when we spoke on our previous podcast about women needing to put an armor on, the stories I hear about my gran are all about her having to put her armor on. I never got to hear a single soft story about her, of her just existing as a woman and being taken care of. So that's like two husbands, other partners, and just generally men around not taking care of her in a way that allowed her to be soft. So I've never heard a story of her just being in her feminine and existing. And I think a part of that also knocks down into my mum. My mum is, yes, a black superhero in many ways because she raised four children. All four of us are successful in our own right. And we're all respectable human beings in our own right, rounded human beings in our own right, and happy, actually. So for me, I think if you look at the product of what each of those women created, it's clear that their impact is huge on the world, but specifically on me being able to watch that, it gave me faith, hope, and understanding of what a good woman looks like. And I think sometimes as a young man, like, because there are women out there who aren't all loving and spice and warmth, there are manipulative women out there. And I was able to understand what a good woman was, a direct reference. So as a man coming into the world, it was important to me to have that and benchmark what a lived experience amongst women should feel like for a man like me and what I wanted. So those four women specifically gave me that. And my sister has always been my greatest ally. She's 3 years older than me. And I just think in life, when I needed advice, I needed a measure, a test of reality, someone just to be vulnerable with, that's the first person I can call. And no matter what time, like if I call my sister at the wrong time, so when I was in South Africa a lot, I think one time I rang her at 7 a.m. for her. So it's 9 for me, but 7 for her. And she was so angry at me because she was like, if you call me at 7 a.m., you need to be dying, ill, something big needs to be happening. You can't be calling me for a chat. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. The time here is... And she was like, no, I'm not going to talk to you right now. I'm going to call you back, yeah, later on tonight, but do not call me like that again. And I was like, that's such a specific type of love where it's just like she's sitting there worrying about family in such a way that if anything is out of sync, immediately fear kicks in that something's wrong.
God, yeah.
That
can you imagine the fear that brushed over her when she saw you ring?
Yeah. And like, I feel like that almost like brain space of thinking about family just is taken up. And me and my brother talked about this one time, where one time she was just like, I'm gonna take some time for myself. And we were like, yeah, of course. But then when we saw it in action and it was like, you're not planning mum's birthday, no? So what are we gonna do for mum's birthday? What's happening? Like, so we're just gonna come to the house and then she's gonna get the cake. Like, it became like a real thing of like, and then one day me and my brother sat there, was like, yeah, I miss old Karina. Like, but at the same time being really, really happy that she's like just focusing on what she wants to do and what serves her.
Yeah.
But for us, we didn't realize the gap until the gap came. But that's if I say like that's my best friend, I mean I get to go through life and know at any point I can share life with her and she's open all the way. So that's family. The next layer down is I was very, very fortunate to create my own family with somebody. And for me, it's so important because at the time when I met this amazing woman, this is Nina, when I met her, I would have been 25 and I lived 10 lives before 25. So by the time I got to 25, I was done. I was like, this is long. There needs to be an elevation of this existence because I'm just out here really as a nomad by myself, just doing stuff. Like, yeah, overachieving, but this is a very lonely experience. And I want more for my life. And I literally scanned my whole world. I just wanted to look. I was looking at, like, is this person, could this person be a partner to me? Could we be friends? Could we, like, build a family? Would they get it? And, you know, and I asked questions of so many people at that time. And then I ultimately met this person. And it was strange because I think now that I know us more now, I understand what happened for us when we met. And it was finally peace from the noise. Mm. And we were able to create that together. But fundamentally, the biggest prize was that we created a family. Now, obviously the podcast is Dope Black Dads, but the context of creating it was set on the fact that I struggled with parenting. That's what the context was. And actually being a really good husband, I struggled with. I didn't get what it was required. And so I think the 10, 12 years that we shared life together, I evolved tenfold. It would have been impossible for me to be the person who I am without living with this person and coexisting. And I think our co-parenting now is my greatest achievement in terms of any adult.
Dude, when other guys tell you that they're at war with their children's mums, like, I'm like, but you know how good life is over here if you get on with her.
Yeah. It's for me, it's impossible. We've never actually fallen out, which is a really interesting thing. And it's like, even at the worst of what was happening ever between us, there was so much love there.
Yeah.
And it was finding our way back to a good place, which was the question. And we found it actually pretty quickly. And then what was really interesting is the hardest part was the people around us were more concerned about us than we were.
Mm.
And so I managed to understand what love looks like. And that will be a lifelong partner of mine, regardless. And the fact that it's happening, and I try not to talk about it too much because I think a part of the success of it is the fact that people don't know and it's no one's business. And we're doing it for our children, allows us to behave in a way that is children first and the love is really profound. But then saying that, I think romantic love is a really important thing to be activated in you if it's possible. And I think after my romantic love broke down, a part of me and my belief in it died. Like, because I gave everything. Like, I left nothing on the floor. There's no point of, I would no chance of me looking back on my life and feeling like, if I had just done a little bit, like I gave everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it took so long for me to reestablish trust and belief in many of the things that I had committed to prior to that. And in that, and I mentioned this a part of the first time, is that friendships became my way of being loving. The one thing I wanted to have for myself after my marriage broke down was I wanted to be loving to somebody without it being messy or complicated. I wanted to be able to tap into that side of me, give it to someone and just let it be.
Yeah.
And I tried to find people or be open to people and what that would look like. But it's really, really difficult. And I did actually meet someone really early on. And it's funny because at the point where I said I'm done, they just walked into my life in like a really little kind of like slightly frustrating way because I had to acknowledge them. And for 2-3 years, we just created this really simple friendship of just honesty and transparency. There was ease. But I think the biggest thing for me is acceptance. So I am who I am. There are incredible things that I can do. There are challenging experiences I could create for people. And I don't know if I can take one away without ruining the other. So my whole thing is like, I want to just be accepted, but I need to manage them as best as possible.
Yeah.
But somebody genuinely accepting you for who you are is, for me, is the most loving act they can do for you.
Yeah.
And having experienced that, it kickstarted my belief in it being possible again. So I also honor that particular person as well. And I think it's so important that, again, when romantic love is possible, that you grab it with two hands. And there was a day where I remember, it was actually the hottest day ever in the UK or something. It was like last year. And it was like 900 degrees. And I had my kids with me and they were staying with me, but my house was too hot for them to stay in. Like, for whatever reason, it's like, so I took them to my mum's, who have a garden, and I was like, can you look after them and I'll come get them in the morning. And I remember sitting there feeling like, I can't live in this way, like this minimal lifestyle of like giving everything to everyone, but not giving anything to myself. And I rang this person and I was like, look, I need to make a change in my life. First thing is I need to set myself up to be able to be a frontline primary parent, even though I'm, it's shared. I need to behave like it when they're with me. So I got a new house. And then I remember being in this house for a month and I was like, this house is empty. Like, this house isn't a loving space. It is like a functional space for survival and roof, and there's food here, but it's not a loving space. And I became open to the idea. And I shared this with my friend at the time. And we both started speaking about what that void has created and how difficult it is to fill that void. And almost like an acceptance of like, I may have to take 10% of someone because the full of someone is not available to me.
Yeah.
And then we actually, by the end of that conversation or that week of conversations, agreed that actually what we're doing is as loving as I've ever known. And so then invited them into the space that was created in this new house that I had. And it was such an interesting journey because it's been about just under a year of being open to love. And it's the hardest thing to do when you've had an unloving experience in life. And I think, going through therapy, you get to identify loads of things and times where actually you didn't really have a loving experience. And I think as men, we don't actually get to say that to ourselves out loud. We didn't have loving experience. We didn't have care as a particular word. And that's a really important thing for me now. So I put that as a last layer. And then lastly, day to day in my life, I'm very fortunate.
So that was your third?
Was my second, sorry. Joint second. Yeah. The love I had, the love I have now.
I feel like you're cheating.
No.
I feel like you're cheating.
I'm grouping. but then I think lastly, I really have to honor, and I will forego my honor roll in exchange for this particular list of people who, and I may forget someone, I'm really sorry. But I do think it's really important. Like, as a result of what happened with my grandmother and the question I posed to myself about who cares for me above and beyond, like genuinely, I built and developed much more intentional relationships with a group of women who I feel, even if it's I've seen them once a month, create so much joy by just observing them. It's not about what they do for me. It's genuinely about who they are and how I get to witness that. And it's such an incredible experience. So people like Natalie Worms has been my friend since I was 20 years old.
Yeah,
we've always been close. But then in the last couple of years, we've built another level of closeness and I'm so grateful. And then like more recently, someone like Scarlett Douglas, who we went to Antigua Carnival with, and we were out in Antigua And you know when, like, you know something is forming because we're just doing this. Mm-hmm. We're just rolling. We're busting joke in the back of this bus. There's so many positive memories. But the number one thing you can always check someone by is their values. And she was running that trip. Like, she had the running order and she's like, we're meeting here. What's going on? Why is this happening? Why are we late? Who's this? Like, she just was like...
She was your Michelle.
She was just...
Basically.
And for me, that was her way of loving us because we needed structure. We were doing too much.
You know, some foolish men will be saying that's a bossy woman.
Yeah.
No, she was loving us because it allowed us to rest at certain times.
And you got the most out of the trip.
Listen, without her, it would have been a mess and we would have depleted and we would have got angsty because it was a lot. It was very intense. But shout out to Antigua for hosting us. And then there's people like Jess Malley. So Jess Malley, I started a business with. I didn't really know her very well. We started a business together. I have never known in completion a more integral woman in my life. The way she conducted herself throughout, how she gave herself to the mission, how she performed at the highest level throughout, we built a very successful business. And about almost a year ago, she was just like, Marvin, I'm done. But the way she said she's done, I've never loved someone for their honesty before in such a way. She just said, I have given as much as I can give. And now I want to be more creative. I want to tap into different parts of myself. This, like, fighting racism, anti-racism, and, like, fighting for people's lives has depleted me and challenged me in a way that I feel I have been more than equipped for. But I now want to do something for me. And the thing is, she like proper came to my house and sat down. She forced the meeting, by the way, because I was too busy. I was like, I can't even stop. Can we do it on the phone? No. And she waited about a month. She got to me and she did it in such a loving way. And then she worked out a way to exit without any form of burden on me. Did it to the T, left. And I don't even know if she knows, but I needed that experience. I needed it so badly because it raises the bar for me.
Yeah.
And I love that woman so much and she gave so much. There are more, but I feel like I'm rubbing the mic a little bit. Like even Andrea Larka, you know, a great person. I've known her since I was 19. She's been a wonderful ally throughout most of my adult life. I just am very, very fortunate to have these intentional people and have a space with them where I'm able to like do the dopest things and have joy in it. So thank you to all of them. For being just who you are, and I have no request from you other than continue to be great.
I think we need to thank every woman that we've mentioned today.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Thank you so much. Should we clap or something? I don't know.
Thank you, women. Thank you.
We've actually run over in a really violent way because we have to move on. But thank you to all of those women, but also thank you to all three of you for being vulnerable with your stories, your truth, and actually inviting us into the world that you have and letting us see how you were shaped and the people who have impacted you, because it's really a gift to be able to be inspired by stories of real people adding value in someone's life or just being so dope that you just admire them. So thank you for being vulnerable. Again, this has been the Dope Black Dads podcast. Please subscribe, like, and comment. Say how you feel. Please comment below any women that have impacted you in a positive way and that you want to share that and honor them. Tag them as well if there's possible. And I think the most important thing is make sure you stay in touch with us. If you have any observations about our podcast, write to us at hello@dopeblack.org. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and obviously on YouTube. Thank you, man.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.